this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Sam from FPL Family.
And I'm Andy, FPL Sonaldo.
Well, Andy, we still actually have one fixture left to go in double game week 28. That all-important match between Bournemouth and Luton, which will determine whether we did the right thing by selling Haaland and captaining Solanke, as so many people did this week. Now, this is normally the time that I would just go, Andy, how was game week 28 for you? But this time, I have only three words for you.
Session.
Sun, Hyung, Min.
Just absolutely incredible, Sam. I think I must say, anytime Sun comes through with a masterclass of a performance, I would like to say, there's just nothing like it for such a big fan like me. Just when we thought the double gaming was looking all gloomy, if you own Sun, he came through for us and gave us a glimmer of hope. And I know we're going to deep dive into Spurs, but I must say it was a really, really proud sort of weekend for me. I think especially because of the leadership he displayed. And, you know, he felt like a proper Premier League captain. So it was really nice to see. I also liked how Spurs fought till the final minute of the whistle. So moving forward, I think Sun is a must own for most FPL managers.
And I'm assuming as Sun's biggest fan that you had him in your FPL team and therefore you've had an absolutely brilliant game week 28 so far.
Yeah, correct. I think essentially, if you own Sun and potentially Palmer as well, you're most likely looking at a green arrow this week because everybody else didn't perform. So if you own Sun, you're laughing. If you didn't own Sun, it was a very unfortunate double game week.
Yeah, for me, it was a real mixed emotions afternoon on Sunday because, of course, as a big Spurs fan, as you know, I was delighted with the performance. More on that in a minute. But I'd made the decision to go for Bowen instead of Sun based upon the fixture and based upon the kind of longevity of my team and the way that I saw the budget going over the next few weeks. And so sitting there watching Spurs, I was thrilled with the performance and was also thrilled from a game week 29 perspective because I was like, right, this is looking like a really good investment opportunity. But from an FPL perspective, by the time that Spurs game had finished, I had Mickey van der Ven who'd gone off and therefore not kept the clean sheet. I didn't have any attacking returns or in fact any returns in my team at that point. And I was like, this is a huge red arrow and it's absolutely killing me. As it happened then, KDB did pop up with an attacking return. And then I did have Cole Palmer on Monday evening, who around my rank is actually a bit of a differential. So that was quite nice. But I can't help but think that this was a real missed opportunity by not having Sun and Palmer together. Because as you say, if you've got those two, you've likely got a fairly substantial green arrow. Now, as I said in the intro, it's not over yet. I've still got three players left to play again, including my captain, who hopefully is not going to be missing any more penalties. But I've got Solanke, I've got Zabani, and I've got Doty. So the thing is, it is attack versus defence there. So I'm not going to get returns from everybody, unlikely, unless they all decide to get some attacking returns, which would, of course, be nice. But game week 28 does feel like it's been a bit of a difficult one for a lot of FPL managers. Having said that, some really good performances and some good insights for what we're going to do with game week 29, which of course is this big blank game that we've got coming up next.
Yeah, I mean, I feel for you, Sam. I think a lot of us, let's call it engaged managers, really look to this part of the season to gain rank, right? Mm. Whether it be double game week 25, where we're very disappointed with the Liverpool's performance, or double game week 28, where we had high hopes for Luton and Bournemouth players. As you mentioned, we still have a game to go and it's not over till it's over. So let's hope for the best there. I think most managers captain Solanke, so hopefully he comes through. It's not like he had a bad performance, right? He could have gotten potentially one or two goals. So very excited for this game coming up, but it's not too late in the season to still move ahead and gain some rank. So I think there's a lot to be played left. And as long as we stay engaged, the opportunities will come.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, even I look at Cole Palmer last night, that gained me about 60K back in rank, just him doing well. So it does go to show quite how tight it still is and how you can make massive gains. So if the second part of this double game week does pay off, and if you manage to get your strategy right for game week 29, it's very easy to move quite big chunks of your rank and improve them dramatically. I think it's probably time we get into game week 28 then. And I think it makes most sense on this podcast for us to focus in on the teams that we know are going to be playing in game week 29, because obviously with only four matches, they are going to be the priority for FPL managers, whether you are playing a chip or playing through. What's your strategy? Are you playing a free hit this week?
I am. I was pretty much set on a free hit 29 for the past, let's say, 3 game weeks or 2 game weeks. And I think it's the right approach for me, especially because I'm super thin on players if I didn't free hit, right? I would have potentially 4 or 5 players with 2 transfers, maybe get to 6 or 7. And it was just too much of a risk to go against the field that's most likely going to be free hitting in 29. So for me, 29 free hit works out really well. You know, we have to remember that there's still 2 big double game weeks left in game week 34 and game week 37. 37 is the really big one where I'm planning to bench boost, and yeah, a lot of the stronger teams will be there. And if you look at free hit 34, let's say, or double game week 34, it's actually not too bad to navigate without a free hit. So I think free hit 29 makes sense for me. How about yourself, Sam?
I had a change of heart after game week 27. For me, game week 27 was a bit of a disaster, and nothing quite went the way that I was intending it to. And when you have a really difficult game week, I think it's very easy to go, oh, everything's going wrong, I'm going to just change my plans entirely. And so last week I decided that what I would do is I'd make a transfer by bringing in Bowen that wouldn't necessarily mean I was forced down either avenue. I would free hit, but that would still be fine because Bowen I wanted for the game weeks that followed anyway, albeit that I decided actually I'm going to play through and then Bowen's a great pick going into it. I would have 6. I've got 6 in my team currently. In fact, I've got 2 goalkeepers that play. So I could, if I was allowed to play both my goalkeepers, I'd have 7. So in theory, I could play through it. But the problem I have is they're not the players that I think I really want for game week 29. And not only are they not the players I want, I've also got Mickey van der Ven, who went off injured in that game. And I can't see them risking him in the game in game week 29 against Fulham, because Spurs then obviously have the international break where they could just give him a bit of recovery time, given he's coming back from a long-term injury earlier on this year. Maybe actually it's an opportunity to just go, it doesn't look too bad, hopefully he's fine, but we've got Dragosin who can come in instead. So for me, I'm now in a strategy where I'm looking at my team thinking, I don't have all of the players that I want. I don't have Son, I don't have Tony. These players that I think are really critical for a game week 29 team. And yes, I could take a -8, a -12 to bring them in. But if I can free hit, I've still got my wild card left. So I'll just delay that slightly and play it in sort of 33, 34, which will allow me to have a great team for that next set of potential double game weeks when they get announced. And then, as you say, the bench boost in 37. So I'm on a free hit strategy too, which is why I was so intently watching the matches that included these 8 teams. And I think given that Villa and Spurs are both playing next week, it kind of makes sense for us to start there. A lot of managers will have gone into this Villa Spurs game thinking it was going to be a lot tighter than it was. I certainly did. I didn't think the Spurs would keep a clean sheet, given they haven't kept one since game week 17. The John McGinn sending off, let's come to in a minute. But let's first of all start with Spurs. They seem like the team that you would want to be trebled up on for game week 29. What did we learn from this one about how to invest? Is it a double attack with a one defender strategy? Is it all out attack and 3 attackers? Where's your head at based on this game?
Yeah, so great question, Sam. I just want to go back a little bit right before I get into the Spurs talk, where you're talking about your chip strategy, because what I want to mention is I like how you've sort of maybe pivoted at the last minute. I'm not sure exactly if you've pivoted, but I think it's okay to be very flexible when it comes to chip strategy. And just speaking on the 3 different chip strategies, the simplest one is TC, in the sense that you can compare one TC to another TC, like for like. But free hit and bench boosts are very vague in the sense that it's not just about free hit 29 versus free hit 34. It's also about the surrounded fixtures here and there. So it's really team dependent. And I would urge managers to consider free hitting even if they've, you know, decided not to free it over the last few game weeks if your team needs be. So that's the first thing I'll say. In terms of Spurs, I do think you need to maximize the attacking of players this game week. The reason being is that we've got 4 fixtures, 8 teams playing, and the one that really appeals to us a lot is Spurs versus Fulham, right? And so I understand managers that might want to go for a Pedro Porro or a Udogie just to have that sort of defensive clean sheet in play. But the likelihood of a Poro or Udogie getting an attacking return is really slim. Whereas you have a Son and a Madison and potentially even a Johnson, just to make it a little bit more fun and achieve those hauls. Because we really want hauls in the free hit week. to say the least.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when you look at those guys that you've just mentioned, Son is averaging a goal involvement every 90 minutes under Postecoglou, which is far away from where he was last season when we think about quite how difficult a campaign he had last year because of the injury that he was carrying. That's 14 goals and 8 assists in the Premier League so far this year. And since the start of 2022, all 6 occasions where Spurs have had a player that's been involved in 3 or more goals have all been Son. So he is the one that has got the most explosive potential, I think, across that Spurs team. And of course, when you look at the bonus point system for game week 28 so far, he's so far ahead of everybody else in terms of that bonus point system. So really good potential for him to massively achieve something great. Now, of course, that does sometimes mean that also you get less from him because he's explosive rather than necessarily the most consistent. But when he's in that number 9, we do get more of that consistency than when we get him playing out wide. The other one you mentioned there, James Maddison, I think he had the best start to the season and the best start to his Spurs career that we could have really asked for. I think obviously the injury had a massive impact. It kept him out for a long period of time and he hasn't quite got back up to the standards that we saw in the early part of the season yet. But I did think his performance against Villa at the weekend was almost back to what we were seeing from him in the earlier part of the season. He's been involved in 9 goals in his 8 away games in the Premier League for Spurs this season. And of course, this weekend, it's another away game against Fulham. So I think he's got a lot of potential. And I love what Postecoglou was saying about him wanting Maddison to be more advanced. He was talking in the aftermath of the game about how Maddison has got the quality to score from anywhere. He scored a really good goal this time. And that's where he wants to find Maddison, in that really attacking advanced position. Now, if that's going to be the case, then at his price point alongside Son, they look really nice. And I'm going to do exactly what you just said and treble up on the Spurs attack with Brennan Johnson, because my goodness, the form that Johnson has found has just been phenomenal. And what I love most is that even when he gets benched, which he has the last couple of weeks, he's gone out there. He's still got attacking returns. He's fought for his place in the team, gets rewarded with the start against Villa. And I thought he was fantastic at the weekend.
Yeah, Sam, 3 players you've mentioned. And, you know, if Richarlison was still in the fold, I think we would be seriously considering him. But, you know, starting with Son, right, it's just incredible the journey I've seen throughout his Premier League career. I remember when he first came into the league in 2015, you know, he was sort of a cameo player, got a occasional start. That season is when Modric was sold and they brought in 8 pretty much attackers and he was fighting for a spot. 9 seasons later, he's now the captain of Spurs, made a Champions League finals run, has a golden boot to add to the resume. Just incredible. You know, with a goal and 2 assists over the weekend, Son now has over 20 plus attacking returns for the past 8 seasons in a row, a testament to his consistency. He's been involved in 22 goals and 21 league appearances this season, and a historic performance in the sense that now he is the 5th joint highest goal scorer in Spurs history alongside Cliff Jones. So just incredible. I think this season he's tied 4th in the league for goals, 14 goals, and tied 6th. In the league for assists, just 2 behind the leader in Trippier at 10 assists. I kind of want to put it out there, Sam, that I hope he might win the, you know, assist record this season. Why not, right? And it's also a testament to his evolution and how he's constantly trying to evolve. Because we think of Harry Kane as the guy that dropped deep and created for the team. And now Son's like sort of taking on that role this season. So no doubt you have to bring in Son, regardless of whether you free hit or not, because the haul potential is there at any given moment and probably going to be the highest captained player this game week. So no doubt Son has to be in your team. Maddison just makes sense, right? I mean, it seems like he's a FPL points machine when he's on it.
Yeah, most consistent Spurs player this season when he's been playing. So positive.
And with 4 goals, 9 assists, as you mentioned, he was injured throughout, you know, the middle part of the season, but he's picking up his form. He's on all set pieces, except maybe penalties. So Maddison just seems like maybe not as explosive. He only has 1 haul this season, Sam, but there's always a haul potential in him as well. And I just like how consistent he is. Johnson, I'm a little bit torn, I must say, because his last 2-3 game weeks, he's been good, but he's also had some inconsistent performances here and there. I think he needs more time to settle in to become sort of a really, really good player in the Premier League, but he's on his way. I think form speaks, fixtures speak, so what's not to like there? So for me, the third spot is between a Spurs defender or you go for Johnson.
Is there any love for Timo Werner in this? Because over the last couple of weeks, I was really impressed when he arrived in January as to how he just kind of got involved and wasn't scared to be playing in Son's position, which shouldn't be underestimated. You know, Son was away playing in the Asian Cup. He's come in. I thought he played well. Not necessarily completely up to pace with the way that Postecoglou's Spurs play. Occasional cutbacks. We've kind of got used to Spurs not doing that this season, but has learnt really well. And in the last couple of weeks, obviously gets the goal against Crystal Palace in game week 27, which helped him to, I think, feel like, okay, now I'm really contributing something here. Was maybe a little bit unlucky not to get the start in game week 28. However, comes off the bench and immediately is involved in the goal, gets his second goal in 2 weeks, back-to-back returns. The thing I kind of like about the Werner pick is that he's a forward in the game. So when we're talking about a free hit team, if you are looking at, you know, the double up of Spurs, and maybe we'll move on to West Ham as the next game that we talk about in a minute, but maybe if you fancy a bit of Kudus or Paquetá or Bowen, maybe the double up there, maybe it's a challenge to have three Spurs midfielders, and therefore could Werner offer some potential as an extra Spurs player, but in the forward line?
I think it would be a uber differential and sort of a very risky play, to be honest with you. I wouldn't fault anybody for going for it, because in a free hit week, you want to go for the gut feeling. I know we're very data driven at times, but look, football is played on grass in the end, and free hit, less so about data. So I don't mind it. He did come off the bench, got a goal, but I'm just very iffy about his start. And that's where I don't feel comfortable going for him, when you could even go for Johnson, who him in itself is going to be a differential anyway, and a sure to start, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn as to which one of them I think gets the start. I think there's a good chance that Brennan holds his spot, but I also think there's a good chance that Werner comes back in with the start. I think either way, either of them comes off the bench in that game. And if you are free hitting and you've set up your squad as such that you've got a bench as well, and maybe it's less important, but I think regardless of what happens here, they're both going to get minutes. And with the way that Spurs play, they do like to push on late in games as well and continue to play, as you saw in this one, right to the death. And so with that, against a tiring defence, whoever comes off the bench tends to have a good opportunity or two to get some attacking returns as well. Let's move on and talk about Aston Villa, because Aston Villa, for me, heading into this game, this was the game possibly that I was most worried about from Spurs between now and the end of the season, because obviously so important in terms of the Premier League. But it was also the game that, from an FPL perspective, I was most interested in, because in my head, I was like, well, I'm going to treble up on Spurs, but the other team I want to treble up on are Aston Villa, because they play against West Ham, who have been pretty poor defensively over the last few weeks in particular. But my goodness, it was not the Aston Villa performance that I was expecting to see. The change of formation, I thought, really harmed Leon Bailey. It meant that he sat a lot deeper. And then obviously the John McGinn red card had an impact as well on his performance and his positioning. It meant that I looked at him because he was the one I was looking at. I was kind of like, Watkins, you're locked. You're going to be there. You probably be captain. I've changed my mind since watching Son's performance. But that was the original plan. And then I was like, well, how am I trebling? I'll probably go with an Aston Villa defender. And then I'm looking at a midfielder. Am I going Douglas Luiz? But it's an away game and I prefer Douglas Luiz when it's a home game. Probably then it's Leon Bailey. But I don't know. I just really wasn't impressed. By the time that we'd ended that game, he had one shot and just two penalty area touches. Now, all right, Spurs were dominant. They were playing for a lot of that game with just the 10 men. There wasn't a lot to like from that performance this week from Aston Villa, but I do think we have to be cautious of not just going, well, that was terrible, I'm not getting any of them, because they haven't been bad. They've been incredible this season. So it's difficult, isn't it, to kind of look at game week 28 and not just go, well, as a result of that, I don't want any over here. I think you have to kind of be mindful of it was one bad performance. But do we expect John McGinn not being there to have a detrimental impact on them for the next 3 weeks?
So I think you poised the question really well. And this is what I'll say, Sam. Please do not let game week 28 affect your decision-making on Aston Villa in game week 29, because we have to look at the game state here, right? First of all, Aston Villa are fourth in the league. Let's not forget that.
Yep.
And they're coming off a very tough schedule, actually. So there was a lot of fatigue against Spurs. Plus, We had some, you know, injured players as well. First half, Aston Villa purposely sat really low in a low block. As you know, they play super tight in this like central area, and they really defended well because there's no need for Aston Villa to be attacking against Spurs when they've got, you know, points ahead of them in the title race. So that's what I felt. In the second half, they started to press higher and higher. Sun sort of started to break the line. You saw Sarr making some good movement, and then boom, McKean goes crazy and gets a red card.
Yeah.
And it just totally changed everything. So again, I think game state affected a lot of the outcome of this game week. But moving into game week 29, again, it's just one game week, and Leon Bailey excites me as a player. I don't like Lewis as much, especially for this just one game week. If we were bringing him in for the next 10 game weeks, then I would prefer Lewis over Bailey. Mm-hmm. But I like Bailey as an option. I think he could be a differential. Let's caveat that he's probably going to get around 65 to 75 minutes, potentially a little bit more. But he's not really a 90-minute player, which is where I hesitate. But I still think that he's going to be a pretty good option going into game week 29 against a West Ham team.
The other thing to consider here, of course, is that Aston Villa have European football on Thursday evening. They've got another game against Ajax. And when I was watching the game on Sunday, the commentator was saying that it was Aston Villa's 41st game of the season, and Spurs can only play 41 games this season. And for me, that was a fascinating stat because, of course, we are still only in game week 28. We've got another 10 game weeks of this season left to go. And that's massive, isn't it, in terms of the difference between those two sides, in terms of, like you said, with kind of tiredness, fatigue coming into the legs sometimes. And when you have Aston Villa's European game is finely balanced at 0-0, so they're going to need to go and obviously want to win that game. So that is just something that I'm mindful of. And as I'm creating free hit teams, if I'm making transfers for Aston Villa players heading into game week 29, I would be mindful of just waiting because, of course, it's the same with West Ham, right? And we'll move on to them next. They also have a game to play on Thursday evening. And so all of this can have an impact on the players and the teams that we see at the weekend as well. So just something to be really careful of. Watkins, I think, falls into the camp of everything that you've just said. Just one attempt on goal for him against Spurs. But that doesn't detract from the fact that he's got three double-digit hauls in the last 5 weeks. So this one performance from Aston Villa does not and shouldn't make us go, I don't want any Aston Villa assets for this blank game week, because they still look like a good team to invest in, particularly when we consider that they're about to come up against a West Ham side where clean sheets just seem to have gone out the window. And as an Areola owner, let's move on to West Ham now. I was fully banking on the clean sheet. I was like, right, this is a locked in clean sheet for Areola. He's got Burnley. They're not really scoring any goals. So this looks like a 6-pointer incoming 100%. And, you know, potentially even thought about, do I go with an extra West Ham defensive option? It was only that historically this season they'd not been that great. And going into the blank, I was like, I think Aston Villa are very likely to score in game week 29. So maybe I don't really want the West Ham double up. But for this week, it looked promising. And then Burnley scored two goals. The clean sheet goes. Now, West Ham did come back, but it certainly put me off any defensive assets from West Ham for the blank game week. Has it with you?
Yeah, absolutely agree. If you look at team data throughout the season, Aston Villa's defense is actually one of the most vulnerable defenses in the league. So I'm not convinced to have a West Ham defender against a top four side in Aston Villa. So defense definitely not there. But I think the main options for West Ham is Kudos or Bowen in the attack or midfield. And I would stay away from their defensive assets.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are plenty of options, aren't there? And I, as I said at the top of this pod, I bought in Bowen this week and was very annoyed to see that he didn't get any attacking returns in this one, because Kudos, Pakatar, significantly cheaper than having Bowen, both of them getting some returns in this one. Kudos, I think, is just one of those players that I really like. He was the real attacking outlet for West Ham in this one, in a way where in previous weeks it had been Bowen. This time around, it was definitely Kudos. He received more passes in the final third than any other player on the pitch in that game with 32. So significant involvement there. You know what you're getting with him. You don't necessarily always get the goal threat, but you do get so much assist potential. And that's why, for me, pairing him with Bowen works really nicely moving forward, because I think they both have good underlying stats separately, but put them together. And actually their teamwork is really nice as well. The one thing I would just say is that Burnley conceded 22 shots against West Ham in this game. 22. That is a ridiculous amount of chances that West Ham were given. And West Ham's then XG was 2.11. So they really should have done better with the opportunities that they were having. Going into this game against Aston Villa without John McGinn there, controlling the midfield, maybe there's a little bit more opportunity for the likes of Bowen and Kudus. But for me, I think you have to double up on the West Ham attack against Aston Villa for this week. Bowen and Kudus, I think, are the way I'm leaning. Would you agree, or is there a better option in Pakatar?
So actually, I'm in the camp of potentially not doubling up on the West Ham midfield.
Interesting.
Because we have very limited spots here, right? We've got the Madison and Son combo. For me, I think you have to go Bowen over Kudus. Like, Kudus is a great player in the Premier League and, you know, potential, let's say, star in the Premier League, but he still has a ways to go. And his underlying stats are a little deceiving, Sam. It's not bad, but it's not great. So he plays super high. His position is good. And on the eye test, he looks great. But his stats don't really back it up as much as we expect it to. So if you're going to go for Kudus, you're likely sacrificing that spot for a guy like Bailey, or if you want to go Luis as well. So I think it comes down to Bowen, Madison, Son, and that fourth spot is going to come down to either Kudus or Bailey. And I would prefer to sort of mix it up and have another Aston Villa midfielder, because I think there's going to be a lot of goals in this game, potentially a 2-2, 3-2, you know, even a 2-1, which is a good outcome for FPL managers. So I'm not so sold on Kudus, personally speaking.
Okay. And actually, I think it makes sense at this point to talk goalkeepers, because obviously no clean sheet for Areola. He does come off the back of a really good penalty save return in game week 27. But again, nothing in this one. Is there any way that you keep him? I mean, if you are playing through this week and you've got Areola as your goalkeeper, you just play him right this week. But on a free hit, I think you're probably looking at a different goalkeeper, maybe from Brentford in Flecken.
Yeah, I don't think Areola is the right play here. I mean, you have better fixtures. Even Vicario against, let's say, Fulham potentially could come off with a clean sheet. And he's very involved in passes as well as saves. So there's some bonus potential there. But the one that stands out for me is, I think it's Flecken against Burnley, because we know Burnley's XG is not good. And Brentford have lost 4 out of their last 5 games with a tie as well. But Sam, you have to remember, Brentford have played Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool in their last 5 games, and fixtures breed form. And there is the potential that Brentford get a clean sheet, especially with their 5-3-2 against a Burnley side that's weak in attacking right now.
Yeah, let's move on to the Arsenal-Brentford game, because for me, I said on the official pod last week that I thought that this would be a more difficult game for Arsenal than they'd had in previous weeks, even though the Brentford defence hasn't been solid over the recent weeks and they've conceded more big chances than most of the other clubs in the league. In fact, I think they'd conceded more big chances than everyone else over the last few weeks going into this one. But it was an important match from a Brentford perspective in terms of working out what we do with our Brentford assets, because I don't have Tony. And over the last few weeks, I've kind of felt like I've been getting away with it, because they've not been scoring loads of goals. If he has returned, it's been sort of one return, but he's been good. But then I kind of looked at Visser, who I had in the earlier part of the season, and he did okay for me at that point, never really setting the world on fire. But Visser has more FPL points than Tony in the last 2 weeks. He has a better XG across those 2 matches than Tony does. He's averaging an attempt every 20.6 minutes compared to just 90 minutes for Tony. And he's also ranking better in the bonus point system too. So as somebody who is planning to free hit, I was watching this game kind of thinking, right, I need to understand, I'm going Tony. That's a given. I'm not going to go without him, because I feel like if you're not free hitting, you're going to have Tony. So as a free hitter, let's take advantage of covering out the players that everyone else is going to have and then differentiating them with some good assets elsewhere. So I was kind of like, am I thinking about the double up in the attack for Brentford with Visser and Tony together? And maybe I am. Look, he was absolutely gifted the goal. By a horrible mistake from Ramsdale. And obviously we'd expect Rea to come straight back in. He just couldn't play in this because it's against his parent club. But what's your view on the kind of the Tony Vissa? Is there scope for both? Because the midfield looks much more difficult to pick from because Mbeumo's not there. If he was there, I think we'd all go there. But without him, it feels like if you want to double up on the Brentford attack, you'd have to go with the two forwards.
I absolutely love the Vissa pick, Sam. I think other managers might be considering the likes of Morris potentially as that third attacking slot. But what I really like about Vissa is, as you mentioned, scored three in the last three games, so the form is there. But let's go back to the beginning of the season where it was Vissa and Mbeumo that was really carrying the team and the heavy lifting, right? And if you remember, Brentford were playing really, really well. And at times, I wish I owned Vissa over Mbeumo. That's how, you know, solidified of a player he is in the Premier League. So I really like the pick. As I mentioned, they are coming off of very difficult fixtures. Yes, they have lost four in the last five, but again, against top sides and fixtures breed form. This is the one game week where you could have him in your team. Hopefully he does well. He's gonna be involved no matter what because he's playing alongside Tony. So the potential is there. Mm. And if you're going to go four in the midfield and three up top, Vissa, Tony, double up sounds extremely fun. And that's the one spot where you can go sort of differential. And if it works out, amazing. If it doesn't work out, it's not going to hurt you. So I like the Vissa pick a lot.
Because I think most managers will go for the defensive double up. So obviously Reguilón missed this game with a low-level hamstring injury. Frank was suggesting that actually he's likely to be fine for the game against Burnley in game week 29. So we'd expect to see him come straight back into the team. And obviously he's got the attacking threat. So most people, I think, on a free hit will look at Reguilón with Flecken and then Tony up top. But maybe there's an opportunity to look for a different goalkeeper or not have Reguilón and instead have the two forwards is something that I'm considering. And I think, you know, while we're here, let's just have a quick chat about Arsenal, because although they don't play next week, the Arsenal players are potentially some that managers will look at selling if they are planning to play through game week 29, because obviously they don't play in game week 29 and then they have what on paper is probably the most difficult game. Well, it is the most difficult game that they've got left this season, the game against Manchester City in game week 30. Havertz and Rice continued their form. Nothing for Saka. If I was playing through, I'd hold my Arsenal assets. But that's just me. Is there any world where you think they're sellable? Maybe they're sellable if you've got a wild card on the back of it.
I think it's really tough. This is one of those times where I think you have to look at the player you own. Yeah. And it's never a good idea to go from one Arsenal pick to another Arsenal pick. But you have time in the sense that you have a blank in 29. You can sort of assume that the game week 30 fixture is going to be tough. But historically speaking, when these big teams play, there are certainly some goals involved as well. For example, if I owned Saka, I don't think I would be thinking about selling it, as you mentioned, Sam.
No.
But if you owned, let's say, Declan Rice for some reason, or Havertz, I would potentially consider selling them if it's going to maximize your game week 29, for example, if you don't have a free hit. And then by game week 30, when they play Luton, you could go for potentially a different player from Arsenal that is playing better or you think is going to be more safer as a pick throughout the rest of the season. So that's the only case I would make. But if you're trying to sort of maximize other transfers and you know you're going to have to make some transfers in game week 30, then maybe keeping all your Arsenal assets is the right play as well. It's a really tough one, to say the least.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to another team that does play in game week 29 then and have a chat about Fulham. Obviously, they've got a difficult game on paper in that one against Spurs. However, they have been a team that's really interested me because Spurs defensively, they hadn't kept until this one against Aston Villa. They hadn't kept a clean sheet since game week 17. So they had been vulnerable in defence. And if Mickey van der Ven isn't there, the pace of the defence isn't quite the same. Dragosan has the pace, but not in anywhere near the same way that Van de Ven does. So it does slightly change. And I think Muniz for Fulham has been excellent in recent weeks. Now, nothing for him in this one. But so far, and obviously we've still got a game to go, Iwobi is top for chances created across game week 28. He created seven chances against Wolves. Now, they lose the game, but it's not put me off having a Fulham attacking asset, be it an Iwobi or be it a Muniz for the game against Spurs in 29. What did you make of Fulham in this one?
I like that shout. You know, as you mentioned, Spurs are an elite attacking team, but not the best defensive team. So there's always the potential that Fulham gets a goal here, especially playing from home and playing for a lot right now, right? So Muniz intrigues me. I don't know about his start. Do you know, Sam, if he's guaranteed to start?
I think with Jimenez out, he's likely to get the starts every week. And he's been the most consistent returner for Fulham so far. I think, you know, in the early part of the season, we saw Fulham struggling for goals. We saw them struggling to replace Mitrovic. Jimenez kind of tried to do that when he returned from injury. But actually, it's only been the last few weeks since Muniz has been starting that I think he's really kind of nailed that spot as his own.
Yeah. So I just wanted to speak on Muniz for a bit. If you're on a free hit, certainly you can consider him. You just bring him in this week and then you can lose him the next game week.
Yeah.
If you're not on a free hit, Sam, I think Muniz is very intriguing because, first of all, they play Sheffield United and Nottingham Forest in game weeks 30 and 31.
Yeah.
But he's an enabler. Right. And let's say we own the likes of Watkins, Holland, and Isak. I think he's going to be a very popular option up top. But we also want to own Son. Mm-hmm. We also want to own Salah eventually. You need this enabler in order to fit Salah. So I think if you're not on a free hit, I would really, really look at Muniz as a potential option. Get him in, have the funds to move early on Salah, whereas everyone else will be struggling. So that's very intriguing for non-free hitters. For free hitters, It's just an exciting pick. It's a fun pick to have in your game week 2019.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at him since game week 23, he's got 8, 13, 8, 2, 11, 2. Like, he's been really good. And I think for me, Dominic Solanke is potentially, he's a bit of an issue in some people's teams. Not because of him, not because of his fixtures, because his form is a little bit iffy. We'll see if he can return in the second part of this game. But the fixtures after the blank are incredible. For him. And that's going to mean that a lot of managers go, oh, I don't really want to sell him. But as you say, we've got this Mo Salah-shaped problem that's kind of lingering in the back of a lot of FPL managers' mind that's going, well, if I want to have Salah and I want to have Haaland and I want to keep Saka and I want to have Son, oh, and maybe I want Phil Foden in there. Oh, and by the way, I've got to have Watkins. Suddenly my budget is like, it's just running out quickly running out. So I'm back at a point where I was almost in game week one, where I'm thinking my third forward can't be Solanke. I can't spend 6+ million on a third forward. I've got to find somebody that offers budget value that I'm happy to play some weeks, but also couldn't be benched in other weeks. And when you look at the fixtures that Fulham have, they play in the blank. So if you're not free hitting, that's ideal. They then, as you said, have Sheffield United and Nottingham Forest. They also then have Newcastle and West Ham, two defences that are really vulnerable and can easily be got at. Then it's a difficult game against Liverpool, but you could move him to the bench for that one. Crystal Palace and Brentford, there could be goals in that one. Then it's Man City, again, happy to bench him in that one. And then finally, in game week 38, they end the season with Luton. So fixtures looking not quite as nice as Solanke's, but when you consider the budget difference, having a playing, and this is the important bit, a playing 4.5 forward is exactly what we might need in the coming week. So if you are trying to make your team work for game week 29, you are trying to play through, I think going for him over somebody like Morris makes significant sense.
Yeah, I agree. I think the issue with bringing him in is the plethora of attacking options that are still there. For example, Watkins, Haaland, Solanke. I'm telling you, Isak is definitely going to be on our radars very soon. I'm probably missing a couple there. But it is that Salah thing that's very intriguing, right? And yes, he has great fixtures for the rest of the season. Is he as reliable as the other forwards? Probably not. But if that's going to enable you to have the likes of Foden, Salah, Son, Haaland, all in your team, all these premier options,
yeah,
money's going to be an issue very soon. So it's something that's a sort of enabler move for your future really big picks moving forward.
Other teams that maybe have some enablers that play in game week 29, obviously Luton. Now, didn't keep the clean sheet in game week 28 so far in their game against Crystal Palace. That finishes 1-1. I think we were all kind of hoping that there might be a clean sheet for those that had gone Kaminski, those that had gone Doughty, those that had a defensive asset from Luton. and certainly those that had invested in Morris, because his form had been incredible heading into this one, far better than Dominic Solanke. And he actually, weirdly, was probably the player that I was most worried about not having in game week 28. And he still might be a massive problem for me. He was seen limping at the end of the game, but Rob Edwards was speaking afterwards and he was saying that he just had a lot of cramping and he's put in a big shift, but it's only cramp. So I would expect that for those managers that have still got him to play again in game week 28, that he'd be okay and will feature against Bournemouth. Thoughts on Carlton Morris? Because obviously has the fixture next week too.
I think he's a solid pick. I wouldn't fault anybody for going for him. I think he's going to be a template for your 29 pick top. Like, as in very, very popular. It's most likely going to be the likes of Tony, Morris, and Watkins that most people will get to. But I just feel like you can go someone different from Morris. He's not like the Tony or Watkins, the super talisman, the guy that you know is going to most likely give you attacking return against a easy fixture. I don't feel that with Morris, and I want to have some exciting differentials here and there. So for me, I don't think I'll go Morris as that third attacking slot.
Yeah, I think my first draft of my free hit had Morris in, but the more I look at the other picks, the Wissers, the Muneses, I think that they have such potential to be more explosive than the Morris does. Although I do like the fixture, it's a home match. And when they are at home, it is a better performance, generally speaking, than that we get out of Luton. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think for me, he's one of the ones that the non-free hitters will likely have. So the question I have then is, as a free hitter, do you roll the dice a little bit and see whether we can get some differentials in there instead? And I think probably for me, the answer is yes.
Sam, that's a great point. As I say, I'm still thinking about my team, by the way. I haven't made firm decisions. But what I like about what you just said is that you don't need to go differential on a free hit for the sake of going differential on a free hit.
Yeah.
Because you're already a differential in the sense that you're going on a free hit, right?
Yeah.
You're going to get the most optimized picks, the most important picks for this game week. And that's why when you compare a guy like Bowen to Kudus, you don't need to go Kudus. Bowen in itself is going to be a differential anyway. So I would just like to urge managers to, you know, not think that template picks are too boring, because that team itself is going to be differential this game.
Yeah, let's have a quick word on the final team that have a fixture then in game week 29, and that's Nottingham Forest. They'll have been really disappointed, I think, with their result in game week 28. Obviously, Brighton at home is a very, very difficult place to go, but Brighton have been struggling.
Yeah.
I think that's the nicest way of putting it in recent weeks. And of course, it's typical, isn't it, that Estupiñán is sold by masses of FPL managers heading into this one and then keeps a clean sheet for the first time in what feels like forever. But I think it's mostly Nottingham Forest. Now, for me, Nottingham Forest are a team that I was kind of looking at, maybe investing in going into the blank game week. But we had some kind of weird benching potential issues, because I think a lot of managers would have taken a big look at Elanga going into blank game week 29. Can we still look at him? What's your view on that?
I think so. I think as long as you're confident in his minutes, against Luton, anybody can score. I'm sorry to say this. And Elanga is the one that stands out in that Nottingham Forest team. So I do like it as a pick. I just think that there's better options elsewhere right now, that he's sort of low on my radar and on my list of free hit 29 options.
Yeah, I'm kind of intrigued by Nottingham Forest. Morgan Gibbs-White was another one that I had on my list of potential options for game week 29. Toffolo at the back was another one that I was kind of looking at and thinking, because I think defensively, that's where the difficult picks come this week, particularly if you're looking to double up on the Brentford forwards, because that means you're likely to either not have the goalkeeper or not have Reggie on. So I think when I'm looking at the defenders, that's where I'm kind of thinking about who's got the most potential for a clean sheet. And Nottingham Forest against Luton feels like an opportunity maybe for some defensive picks. So they're maybe on my radar. I think this game, though, has just tampered my enthusiasm a little bit for going really heavy on Nottingham Forest, because I expected them to win this game.
Yeah, that's what happens when you go for sort of, I'm sorry to say, relegation battling teams, is that you're going to get inconsistent performances. So
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to have your hopes too high. But again, this is just one game week, so anything can really happen.
That's all of the eight teams that play in game week 29. A little word, though, for Chelsea on Monday evening, because Cole Palmer, yet again, saving a lot of FPL managers, myself included, saving the game week for me with his goal and his assist. Since his first start for Chelsea this season, he's got 138 FPL points in 19 Crazy. Games. Only Ollie Watkins has got more than that with 155. Like, I just don't think we can finish this pod without giving a massive, massive shout out to Cole Palmer, because for me, I've seen a lot in recent weeks of managers kind of selling Cole Palmer because they need to play through game week 29 because they've used their free hit chip already, or because they're not planning to play their free hit chip now. And obviously Chelsea don't have the fixture. But I watched Chelsea on Monday evening against Newcastle, and it was the first time this season where I've watched Chelsea and really thought, this looks a lot better. This looks a lot, lot better. The link-up play with Jackson, I thought, was good. I thought Mudryk's performance when he came on was also really interesting. Obviously, there's some cheap options from the Chelsea defence as well with players like Gusto. Now, the clean sheet doesn't stick this time around with Newcastle's worldie of a goal from Isak, who I think also, by the way, is going to be a really popular pick when we come out of the blank. It's the blank that's putting people off players like Palmer, like Isak. But Palmer, for me, again, a bit like I was saying about Saka with Arsenal, he would be a player that if I was playing through, I'd just move to the bench because I'd know the longer term. I just think he offers such exceptional value for money that you're going to want to hold him.
1,000% agree. If you have Palmer right now, you're laughing, because game week 30 to 34, his 33, his fixtures are outstanding. Chelsea are finding a rhythm. And it's just incredible, his story, right? This is a personal anecdote, Sam, but I live in Seoul, South Korea, and over the summer, Man City had come for sort of their summer tour, and he was still in that Man City uniform in the summer, moves to Chelsea, and now is potentially as important as Sterling in that team, as well as the other senior players. So if not the central focal point of Chelsea, so a superstar in the making, consistent, what's not to like here, and super cheap in FPL this season. I think next season you'll see him at that 7-8 million price point potentially, which will make it tougher to get to him, but definitely worth that price point. I mean, he's performing, and as you mentioned, second in terms of points since his start alongside Watkins. So outstanding pick.
Yeah, I just think he's so, so important to Chelsea, but also to our FPL teams. You know, when I'm looking at my team and eventually to the wildcard that I'll create, at no point have I ever thought I won't have Palmer. Like, he makes so much sense. And I've had him for such a long time now that the value that he has provided with my team, and this is something that you should be careful of if you are planning to play through and then bring players back, be it on a wild card or through free transfers afterwards. If you've got a lot of team value tied up in a player, if they've taken substantial rises since you brought them in, like Cole Palmer will have for many managers. So for example, in my team, I've got 0.3 tied up in Cole Palmer. If I sell him, I've got to pay 0.3 extra to be able to bring him back. Now, couple that with finding a spot for Mo Salah, spending the budget to have Son, having Haaland, suddenly the budgets are getting tighter and tighter and tighter in a way that maybe they haven't for a few weeks, because we went for a period of time where we didn't have Haaland. We went for a period of time where we didn't have Salah. We haven't necessarily needed to have Son. We haven't necessarily needed to have somebody like Phil Foden or the extra Man City attacking option, because we'd had Alvarez, who was significantly cheaper. At this point of the season, all of these big premium assets that we've maybe been able to get away with not having one or two of them so far, suddenly all look like, after the blank, that you're going to want to have them. So just be careful if you do sell your cheap options this week. If you've got value in them, it might be hard to get them back. And with somebody like Palmer, you're going to want him back.
Okay, Sam, should we wrap it here?
Now seems like a good time to go and tinker with those free hit teams, doesn't it, Andy?
With just four fixtures this upcoming game week, it requires careful planning and maybe a chip. Kelly, Jules, and Sam will be on Thursday with the FPL pod, building free hit teams, talking about the must-haves, as well as how to decide what to do with our FPL teams.
And if you haven't already done so, don't forget to join the FPL pod and mini league. The code is IB3WLK.
See you next time, everyone. Thank you.
Bye, guys.